It's a podcast. It's a bird. Where are my binoculars at? Bird song. Bird song. It's a podcast. Okay, welcome to Bird Banter with Mauriel Bruce. So I've been listening to this song that's been out for a little while. Bird Song by the Sweatshop Boys. And sometimes it's better not to look into things too much, because I was so curious, like, what is a rap group? What was their the genesis of having a bird song? So I decided to look into it. I watched the video. Don't watch the video. It's terrible. And I wish I just left things alone. And then I was talking to our great intern at the Marsh, Jacob LaChapelle. And he told me that it's actually a song about drugs. So when I was reading the lyrics, sure enough, there's all these references to drugs in it. There's actually a line in there that it sounded like they were saying Heligan, which is a type of trap that a Heligan trap to catch birds, which is quite an elaborate funnel system. So I was thinking that, wow, these guys are like, maybe they're banders. And it just turns out that, yeah. So it was, but I almost wonder if it's kind of like the, I encounter older gentlemen oftentimes that they try to hide the fact that they're birders. Or that they love watching birds, and they always say, well, it's the missus that's really the one that I put the feeders out for, but it's, in fact, it's them. So I almost wonder if it's like, there's actually one of them is a birder. I know one of them comes from England, so there's a lot of birding in England. So I almost wonder, because the references are even like, there's the one line in the song where, like, some of the birds they mention are just like, they're kind of obscure birds that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know unless they were a birder. So it's, I almost wonder if it's, if it has something to do with that they're trying to hide it. So anyway, the one line here that I was going to read was, I'm eating muffins with a nightingale, Atlantic puffin, Montezuma quail, Virginia rail, California black rail. If you tried to rhyme birds, you would fail. So instead of being something for the, what's the name of the group again? The Sweatshop Boys. So instead of Sweatshop Boys, I think we could have a group called the Sawwet Girls, which for those of you that know Sawwet Al. So this is my 32nd attempt at a rap that I came up with last night. So even grosbeak, pine grosbeak, bunting of snow, if Sweatshop Boys were better, they would know. Bluebird feast, flycatcher least. If they found a grub, they would join a feminist bird club. So, you guys, Sweatshop Boys, do a better job. Put some time into it. Get epic. And which kind of leads me to, where is our bird song anthem? Like, so those of you that are out there that have talent, get going. Let's get some bird songs out there. It's like, and I don't even want to talk about the Eels song. So we're not even going to go there. So it's time. So maybe that's something I've always, Ben's heard me talk about this before, that I've always felt that to get rich, we could make a country song. So maybe what we'll do is we'll come up with a country bird song. So maybe that's what, but if I could sing, or if I had any kind of talent in lyrics and stuff. So anyway, folks, get out there, get your bird songs going. Let us know. We do need a bird anthem, I would think. So this is episode 34, and we're going to dig right in. I always knew at the Marsh that we would eventually catch a bird that is like off the charts in terms of rarity. And when it kind of happened, I thought it was going to be something with some spectacular color. But we did catch a bird that it's kind of an interesting story. So I'm not entirely clear on the status of the first bird. But anyway, we caught a bird that's called a dusky flycatcher. And it is a very, in terms of specularity, if that's even a word, spectacularity, it's a very dull gray and white bird. There's nothing that jumps out at you. But we were lucky to have Chris Suka, who used to band with us. And Chris spent a number of years banding at the Mackenzie Lake Bird Observatory in northern British Columbia. And a dusky flycatcher is a bird that spends its life west of the Rockies. So why a dusky flycatcher ended up at the Hillierton Marsh is just is absolutely epic. But to have Chris there who could identify that it was a dusky, because if I had seen it, I would have just, if I was the one that took it out of the net and was going to band it, I probably would have thought it was either an alder or a least flycatcher. I didn't take the measurements, so I'm not really sure about that. But anyway, so we believe it was the first dusky flycatcher to ever been banded in Ontario. I'm not sure how many have even been seen in Ontario, but there was a story about a dusky flycatcher that there's something in the records about one being banded, but it ended up dying. And someone identified it at the Royal Ontario Museum. So I'm not sure of the history of that. It was something that was one of the volunteers looked it up in the records on eBird, and that was noted years back. But so that's a story that maybe we'll eventually figure out. But for now, it seems that we're looking at it as the first record of a banded bird. It was, when it released, it flew beautifully, so there's no concerns about its health. So the tricky part is that we never saw it again, because the marsh is just so vast. So if people had wanted to come to see it, it would have been a real struggle. So that's pretty cool to get that dusky flycatcher. But I'm still holding out to see if we might someday catch a painted bunting or something with a little more color. But still, it's very, very cool. It's the next thing I want to talk about is really going to be a challenge to talk about, just in terms of numbers. And I just wanted to talk about the amazing fall season that we had. We set all sorts of records for birds being banded. And we are hovering close to 16,000 birds now. I'm just going to go through a few, because if I were to carry on too long, I think I'll put everybody to sleep. But we had an amazing year for Savannah sparrows. We ended up catching 1,364. We caught a huge number of white-crowned sparrows at 1,225. We ended up getting 830 red-eyed vireos, which is a new record for us. And the list just goes on and on. It was absolutely phenomenal. I'm just looking what else sort of jumps out at me here. We ended up catching, I know Dawson's PD's favorite bird was a black-throated blue warbler, and this year we had 22. So Dawson, if you're listening to this, you might want to get yourself back out to the marsh next spring or fall. And that broke, the past record was 12 birds that had been banded in 2015. The other thing that was very neat was we ended up catching 5 Vesper sparrows this year, and that broke the record of 2 in 2019. So that was at our grassland site, which I want to talk about a bit more later. But so congratulations to Ray Zaman, our bander in charge. He coordinated a fantastic banding crew. We had some volunteers from Ohio and from Pennsylvania, and I can't remember where Margaret was from. Margaret Jensen, also from the States. I can't remember where she's from now, but sorry, Margaret. But they did a fantastic job,
and I just can't. Every time we have a record-breaking season like this, I always think that it'll never happen again. Our last big year was 2018 when we caught 14,781 birds. But out of that number, 2,600 were common redpolls and 2,100 were pine siskins. So the numbers we had this year were more varied, and we didn't have the closest we had to that big number was 2,250 snow bunting. So, but out of that, in 2018, out of those pine siskins, that was just a huge year for pine siskins. But we had a pine siskin that showed up in Oregon and another that showed up in Nanaimo, which was pretty cool. So it'll be really interesting to see where some of these birds show up. And yeah, so I could... I could go on about, I'd love to go on, but I just don't, I think, I know some people use the podcast to get their kids to fall asleep. And if I kept going over the numbers, but it looks like we had about, 27, new records. So it was phenomenal. And, I may as well go and speak to our grassland site. So 4 years ago, we started banding, at a spot beside three farmers' fields where they kind of come together. And it's an area of research that I would love to expand on. The couple of challenges with banding at a grassland site is it seems to make a big difference in what the farmers are growing on the fields. The birds don't seem to like oats very much. So in years that they're growing canola, we do really well. And it seems to make a difference. The other thing is that banding beside a farmer's field is wind is a huge issue. And this year, for whatever reason, we ended up having a week of no wind, which was, I've never seen it before. And that allowed us to run that site a little bit more. And the reason we started banding at that site was to try to catch American pipits, which we ended up naming our new golden retriever Pipit after. One of the things that is that I find really exciting about it is that there's just not many banders that are monitoring grassland birds, because a lot of banding stations are set up near the Great Lakes. Or near large bodies of water, in spots where the migration is funneled into. So we know that grassland birds are in trouble. Our attempt to try to unravel some of those mysteries is to monitor the grassland birds, which is also the reason why we ended up with so many white-crowned sparrows this year. But hopefully we'll be able to standardize our efforts and or expand our grassland research. So that's something that we're going to be looking at in the future. The other new project that we took on this year was to band shorebirds at the marsh. And I always had the notion that banding shorebirds would be way more elaborate and difficult. We actually talked to Nigel Shaw in our last podcast about it. But so this fall, we managed to, with the help of Olivia Mallett and Andrew Brown, as well as our banner charge Ray Zeman, we managed to catch 12 semi-palmated plovers, 8 least sandpipers, 41 semi-palmated sandpipers, 1 lesser yellowleg, 1 solitary sandpiper, 1 stilt sandpiper, 8 Dunlin and 1 short-billed dowitcher, which is really cool. And that's an area that we're definitely excited about. We're hoping to partner with York University to band each spring and each fall as they're on their migrations. And hopefully this is something that, and we have been exploring the possibility of creating a shorebird cell, which would just promote the promote providing habitat for shorebirds, because I've always had the notion that when we see shorebirds flocking to flooded fields, that they're really looking for suitable habitat, and we're probably the perfect point for them to refuel as they're heading up towards James Bay or coming back from James Bay. So that's a very exciting line of research, and that's something that I think people would really enjoy to come out and see at the marsh. So congrats to everyone's hard work on those shorebird numbers. So a couple of those species we've never banded at the marsh before. The lesser yellowleg, short-billed dowitcher, and stilt sandpiper were all new. So very cool. The other thing that we had at the marsh in the spring, which we probably already mentioned, but it's still exciting, was we had red knots that were taking advantage of the mudflats in cell one. Right on. So moving along I'd like to have a big shout out to our friends at Agnico Eagle Mines, who made a huge donation of $10,000 to the marsh to buy nets and banding pliers and to help us fund another MODIS tower in the area. So that was very much appreciated. We also, this year, we were very fortunate that Ontario Hydro chose us as their fundraising organization. And they had a golf tournament and a barbecue, and they were able to raise $3,500, which was their local money that they raised was matched by Ontario Hydro. So that gave us $7,000, which was magnificent. And also, so a huge shout out to the folks at Hydro and Georgia Pacific, a local mill gave us $2,000 towards our education, and they're specifically hoping that we will use that money to promote education and get lots of kids out to the marsh. So that was wonderful. So thanks to those three organizations, and which actually will take me to I have this on my page to say bird rant right now. So one of the things is that we don't get any government funding. We are totally dependent on donations and memberships and people coming out to see our banding and see the research. There's I think about 11 bird observatories in the province. And most of those don't get any funding. I know there's a few banding stations in Alberta that get funded by the government. And it just occurs to me that we would never leave the surveying of moose or fish or things like that up to volunteers to do. It just seems to me that the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry would be beholden to support banding stations. And if we were to be able to get, let's say we're to get $100,000 from the government or the Canadian Wildlife Service, which I know all of those are strapped for funding, but it certainly would go a long way to allowing us to take on more research projects and not to have to worry about how much it costs to fill the propane tank, which was $2,200, incidentally. So I know all non-for-profits are in the same situation where they're wishing that they could have some money from government, but that is something that I think, rather than just ranting about, I should put pen to paper or my fingers on a keyboard and make a pitch and see maybe there's somebody out there. So if anyone knows of any sort of funding potential or an endowment or any foundation that you think we should be getting in touch with, let us know, because we're always on the lookout for funding possibilities. So thanks for giving me a moment to have a brief rant. I wanted to have a shout out. Just before I do that, I thought it's worth noting that this is the 100th anniversary of bird banning in Canada. So a great shout out to the Canadian Wildlife Service and all the people over the years that have allowed banding to prosper in Canada. I was interested to hear during a webinar the other day, I'm not sure where it was banded, but the first bird ever banded in Canada was an American robin, which kind of makes sense when you think about how many robins are out there. So that is a shout out to all of the banders and volunteers over the last 100 years that have allowed that important research to be carried out. On that topic, I just wanted to have a brief shout out to Jacob LaChapelle, who is our bilingual outreach intern, which was funded by FedNor. And we are just so impressed with the work that Jacob is doing and feel very fortunate to have him. Jacob is a local fellow who went to school at the local high school, and we're just very fortunate. I was able to teach Jacob back when he was in either, I think it was grade 11, maybe grade 12. He took the Terra program, and we're just really delighted to have Jacob with us, and we're going to have him for another year. So people, if you haven't seen Jacob out at the marsh, you will be seeing him in this winter, the spring, or the fall. Okay. I was really pleased a week ago, actually 2 weeks ago now, to start catching snow buntings. And then all of a sudden we got rain and the snow buntings have disappeared. So it was quite a thrill. I've hardly ever banded any snow buntings in December. There's been a few years I've been able to band them on Christmas Day, which I thought for sure was going to happen. And we actually, one of the birds that I think I caught about 70 snow buntings 2 weeks ago. And one of the birds was banded, already banded, and it was banded by David Lamble, who is the renowned king of snow bunting banding. And I think we've caught about 20 of birds that he banded just outside of Arthur. So that was kind of cool to get one of his birds. Okay. We are getting ready for the Christmas Bird Count for Kids, which is always a lot of fun. This is the first year that we're going to be able to do it right at the marsh with our new building. So we're looking forward to that. And we were hoping that there's a local farmer that always does a horse-drawn carriage ride for the kids. And we were hoping this year he'd be able to use a sled right on the berm, which would have been really cool, but it doesn't look like we're going to have enough snow for that. We put on our website that we had 20 spots for kids to sign up. Well, for their parents to sign their kids up. Well, I guess the kids could have done it themselves, but anyway, the 20 spots that we had vanished in half an hour. So that was, so we put 10 more spots up and they went just as fast. So we're going to be having 30 kids out, and we're starting to reflect on if we could make it work that we could have more kids out. The reason that we capped it at 30 was just to get supplies for the kids ahead of time. So if there's that much demand, we should be exploring ways that we could get more kids involved. So that's so what we did, though, so where the wagon turns around is at the main parking area, which is on Crick Road, which is pretty much in the middle. That road goes to about the middle of the marsh. So what we did this year was we put up a feeder for the first time in the main parking lot. And it's been, I'm not sure why it's taken us so long to think of having a feeder there, because I know there's a number of people that the only access they use at the marsh is the main parking area. and they don't come down to see the banding. So it's just kind of cool to have a feeder where people come in and park. And I was really surprised to and chickadees found the feeder almost the very next day, which I was intrigued by. And I spent about half an hour the other day watching the feeder, and none of the chickadees had bands on them. So, and some people may be aware that we are color banding our chickadees, and we have a spot at the north end of the marsh, which is about 4 kilometers from the shed, where we carry on most of our banding. And those chickadees are separate. What's the term I'm looking for here? Are basically a separate flock, because we've never had a northern bird come down to our shed nets, and nor have we had a shed bird go to the north end. So now that we have the main parking area is just under 2 kilometers from the marsh, and it's almost 3 kilometers from where our north end site is. So now we're intrigued. I'm wondering if we should start color banding the ones at the parking lot a different color than the other two sites. So they did a study in Kingston in the 80s and found out that the range of a flock of chickadees is about 2 kilometers. So it's just another layer there in terms of being intrigued by the movements of chickadees in the winter. So we're coming up with a plan. The hard part is when I bought a bag of black oil sunflower seed for the marsh the other day, it was $60. When I first started out, it was $20 to buy a bag of sunflower seed. So research does come with costs. And so that's something we have to really think about, is whether or not we can afford to run another feeding station. But I think in terms of just for our visiting public, having a feeder up there just makes sense. So too many cents for a bag of sunflower now. So on the podcast in the past, we've mentioned a few times about the positive impacts of not just bird watching, but being in nature. And I was intrigued of a friend of mine who's a doctor. Actually, his nickname, we call him Condor, because when he plays hockey, when we used to play hockey, he's about, he must be 6'5", maybe 6'6". And when he had a hockey stick in his hand, it was like he had a wingspan like a condor. So we started calling him Condor. Anyway, Condor is telling me that in British Columbia, Ontario, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, doctors are writing prescriptions to allow people to get into national parks for free. So I thought that was such a great idea, and it sort of goes back to what we were talking about with vitamin N. So it's almost like they're getting a prescription for vitamin N, which would be vitamin nature. And we were actually talking about it at breakfast this morning, and we're saying, like, I know, again, like, funding is always an issue, but someone suggested, like, why are we charging people to go to national parks? And I know they have budgets and they have education programs and they have staff and all of that. But if this sounds like the perfect preventative medicine, to the more we can get people in nature and to be, and if we're writing prescriptions, noting that it's going to be good for their mental health and their overall health, then why aren't we just promoting the parks to begin with and just getting Canadians outdoors more? So I don't know, but I get it. It's it all comes down to money, but it's something to ponder. But it's I applaud the ministries of health for doing this. It's a great step. So hopefully there'll be more of that. More of that to come. And it was kind of funny. I was at speaking of health, I was I'm going to be requiring some knee surgery. And I was in a, I was in the waiting room, and I heard a couple that were from Nulliskard, the Tri-Towns. And they were saying that it was the first time they'd been to North Bay without having met anybody from the Tri-Towns. So I went, I'm actually from the Tri-Towns. And they went, as soon as they heard me, they went, you're that guy that's on the radio, because I'm often on CJTT. And so they went, yeah, you're the guy that's from the radio. So I thought that was kind of cool to meet them. And the other thing, when I was, I'm not sure what possessed me to do this, but I was on the Professor Google the other day, and I noticed that there's another podcast that's called Bird Banter, but it's just called Bird Banter. And I noticed that on the review, they have Bird Banter as 1 star. And then I looked at, my ego's big enough that I looked up Bird Banter with Boreal Bruce, and there's 5 stars. So I guess this is my way of saying to the people that said that I was worthy of 5 stars. So thank you very much. And for anyone else, take a moment and give a review on the podcast. So that would be, I thought that was kind of cool. So our next event at the Marsh, we are calling the last day to band this year, which just works out that it's on Sunday, December 31st. We are, as I mentioned earlier, we're at 15,814 birds banded at the Marsh this year, which is a new record. Can we get to 16,000? That's the question that that we're wondering about right now. So if you're in the area and you would like a chance to see some birds up close, we're right now at the Marsh, there are a lot of evening grosbeaks. At my home feeder, we have pine grosbeaks, but I haven't seen any at the Marsh. But there's a very healthy flock of 30-plus evening grosbeaks at the Marsh. There's hairy and downy woodpeckers. The number of common redpolls seems to be growing every day. So we're looking forward to banding. And in the spirit of the holidays, there's no charge to come out for the last day of banding of the year. So hopefully we'll see you there. And I just wanted to mention, if people, I know this will probably be a little late, I'm not sure if this will be out before Christmas. If you're trying to think of a last second stocking stuffer, especially if you have a birder in the family, try to go out and buy some shade grown coffee, because shade grown coffee makes a huge difference for birds. There's way more biodiversity associated with shade grown. The birds are actually beneficial to the coffee growers because they eat insects that might otherwise damage the coffee plants. So it is just a overall absolute great benefit to be buying shade grown coffee. And people tell me that drink coffee that they find shade grown tastes better as well. And there's a lot of companies that do shade grown coffee. They will put a certain percentage of their proceeds towards bird research. So maybe that's what we need to do. We need to get the coffee people to support the Marsh so I don't have to do any more rants about needing money. So in closing here, I want to thank our tech T-Rex, Ben McPherson. And because he is big, he is that big to me and is that vicious when it comes to editing the podcast and making it sound great. And I just thought that it's kind of cool too that T-Rex is Tyrannus, which is Latin for king. And Tyrannus Tyrannus is the Latin name for Eastern Kingbird, which we also set a record banding this year. And Ben is definitely the king of making the podcast happen. Long live the king. So thanks for tuning in, and bird is the word. Thank you. The Heligatry Marsh is a non-for-profit organization that can issue tax receipts for donations. We are a membership organization relying on members, drop-in fees, and goodwill. Your support helps us to continue our important research, banding and monitoring birds in the boreal forest. For more information, check out our website or find us on Facebook, Instagram, or simply Google. A pretty cool place to be in nature in northeastern Ontario, the Heligatry Marsh.